Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I don't believe in witches, but that they're real. They're real. This is a phrase I often heard said when I was a child growing up in the north of Chile, a long and narrow country in the southernmost area of the American continent. A magical land with unforgiving deserts at the north, dark and impenetrable forests in the south, and enormous icy blue glaciers reaching the south end of the world. The north of Chile, where I grew up, is a desert area where the soil itself is filled with chemicals such as peroxide that kill anything trying to grow in it. But these same sterile soils are filled with riches and minerals, especially silver and copper. And because of this wealth in mineral resources, there has been a mining industry in the area since the late 19th century, even before big cities and the resources needed for them arrived in those areas. The north of Chile is filled with ancient legends and mysteries. People are often lost in the desert and never found or returned several years later, looking just as they did when they disappeared, still believing it is the very day when they went missing. Strange voices of centuries-old battles are still heard. Terrifying creatures roam the dunes, and, of course, beings not from this world are often seen by people working in the copper mining operations. But those are all stories for another time. Before these mysteries populated the minds of the local folklore and superstition, people already spoke of witches in their infernal Black Sabbath, where they would commune with darkness incarnate and surrender themselves to the most wicked of perversions the human mind can conceive. Child sexual abuse, torture, cannibalism, animal and human sacrifice, etc. In Chile, when someone speaks of witches, it is a neutral pronoun. For there are female as well as male witches, both equally abominable, both working to spread misery wherever they went, turning people away from the righteous path and towards a life of hedonism and self-destruction. Because that's ultimately what darkness seeks, to drag you through feces and destroy your very soul, while you smile and ask for more. It is said witches fly towards their Black Sabbath on Friday nights, during the new moon when the skies are dark, only lit by the soft glow of the distant stars on a branch of the Milky Way we can see, which when seen on moonless desert nights, looks as if the night itself was a living being, exposing its backbone to us. These witches don't fly on a broomstick as many people think European witches do. These witches don't fly on a broomstick as many people think European witches do. Oh no. These witches meet in caves deep in the mountains, in ravines and crevices where normal-sized people would have a hard time fitting in, where only children could maneuver their way around or get lost forever. Instead of broomsticks, these witches turn themselves into strange birds. Some say these birds look like very large cows or like black vultures, while others claim these strange creatures, which the Amerindians call tutu, are instead the very heads of the witches, which they detach from their bodies by means of dark craft, with a necromantic vest made of human skin. The skin of someone who loved them and whom they loved. The grotesque transformation was invoked, ears turning into large black wings and their veins and viscera hanging as it would on a decapitated head turn into birds' feet with sharp and strong talons, with which they can steal children whose parents were careless and look away if only for a moment. But not all babies that were stolen ended up eviscerated and devoured, with their skin becoming soft leather or the fat being used for candles and chtonic rituals. The very lucky ones got to live a life of constant hell, becoming an Imbunchi, a twisted and deformed creature of pain and sorrow, with their hands and legs broken and then mended in unnatural contortions, in a way the human body was never meant to move. These monstrosities would become guards at the entrance of the witch's cavern system. It is said that sometimes, on moonless nights, you can hear the witches cry out as they fly by, a horrible scream of agony and joy. And when you hear them, you must say this to them. Fly by, devil bird. You are already late. Jesus Christ came by earlier, and he has already won the race. I have personally never seen or heard of these devil birds, these witches. But my grandmother once told me the story of one of her family members, before she was born, who had a close encounter with these things, and the horror she endured haunted her for the rest of her life. This story is based on real events. My grandmother told me about her great-aunt, who once lived in the small town of Salamanca, a mining village of barely 12,000 people in present day, and perhaps only 1,000 people in the late 19th century when these events took place. Salamanca was in a semi-deserted area, with two rivers nearby that allowed some vegetation to grow. Back then, most people were poor, and didn't have many options to make a living. If you were a woman, you found yourself a good husband who, hopefully, didn't beat you too harshly. And if you were a man, you found yourself a mining job, risking your life every day in dark tunnels, only to earn barely enough to feed your family, and often dying before your time, buried alive when one of those tunnels collapsed, or from lung cirrhosis after decades of breathing toxic substances. My grandmother's great-aunt was one of the lucky women who found herself a good husband, a hard-working man who didn't drink and didn't beat her, and only wanted to save enough from his work to one day own some land of his own, land he could leave to his children. He had been working since he was 12 years old. This was the way it was back then, when kids as young as age 10 were forced to earn a living and help around the house, as feeding hungry bellies was more important than earning an education that could help better their lives. In spite of all the challenges, they were happy. They had met when they were both teenagers, at church. Soon they were married and they moved together to Salamanca so he could find work as a miner. They had hopes for the future, and within a short time of moving to their new home, she became pregnant with their first child. Pregnancy, and especially the time after childbirth, are the most dangerous moments for a woman and child when dealing with darkness and its minions, which is crave the tender, soft flesh of a newborn baby, and they enjoy driving a fragile woman to madness and despair. But my grandmother's great-aunt held on to her faith, traditions, and superstitions. Even though she heard the bone-chilling cries of those devil birds on moonless nights, far off in the distance and getting closer, she knew what to say. And she always held on to her baby, knowing if she would let go of him for an instant, the witches would have him for supper. Years went by of happy and simple life, a hard-working couple with faith for the future, living one day at a time. Their baby grew up soon, too old to be carried away by the witches now. He was now 9 years old. Her womb desired to be a mother again, so they conceived another baby, this time a baby girl. And once again their house was filled with jingles and nursery songs. And once again they had to worry about devil birds, witches, and their sharp iron teeth, their blood-curdling screams, and not knowing if one day they'd close their eyes just for a second too long, and their baby would be gone forever. Their first son had grown up too fast. He was a smart boy, who did well in school, with an inventive and curious mind, just like every other kid of his age. It wouldn't be too much longer till he would have to abandon school and find work at a farm or in the copper mines. He wished it could be different, but that's just how things were back then. My grandmother's great-aunt wished it would be different, too. She wanted him to study and become a doctor, or perhaps a priest, someone who did good for the world. With his newborn little sister at home, the boy felt like a big man already. He had no more time for thinking about childish games, even though he missed a time of careless existence, and now he missed his mother's hugs and kisses. She was looking away from him, looking to her newborn baby. He felt it, and he knew he was no longer her little baby anymore. One morning, before her husband went up to go to work, she woke up to make breakfast for her family. She noticed the door on the back of their little adobe house was left open, and her heart sank to her stomach. Had someone come into their house? She went to check again on her little baby girl. She was safe and sound in her crib. Next, she went to check on her young boy, and his bed was empty. Had he run away, or was he taken? It was a moonless night. Just a few moments later, the boy came through the door. Before dawn, before his father would wake up, he had walked up to the river that crossed the valley of Salamanca, the only thing that allowed any vegetation to grow in this semi-desert area of the world. He had gone to swim in the pitch-black darkness and think about his future. She scolded her boy for being so careless and for leaving the door open like that, knowing fully well what superstitions say. And for going alone into the night, because even if witches thought him a bit stale for their taste, there were still plenty of bad people who wouldn't think twice of hurting a young kid wandering the streets at night. But she was happy. Happy he hadn't run away as she suspected. After being scolded, the boy replied, "Mom, I don't want to be a miner. I don't want to work on a farm. I want a better life." Saying these words in a calm and gentle voice, barely above a whisper. His mom understood how he felt. She hugged and tried to comfort him.
"What would you like to do instead?"
she asked him, knowing their options were extremely limited. I don't know. I want to study, perhaps travel and see the world. I want a chance for a better life. I'm sure I can think of something better than just staying here." For a moment, they held each other in silence.
"Whatever you choose, I'll support you," she said, trying to show empathy, and knowing fully well what his only real options were, hoping he'd come to his senses.
Days went by, and with them, also the phases of the moon. She didn't have to worry about the devil birds for a little while, but she felt in her heart that her boy would truly run away soon. Before he was even 10 years old, she told her husband her concerns, and together they decided it was time for him to talk some sense into the boy. Show him the value of hard work, because sooner or later, at 10 or 16 years old, he'd have to learn it. My great-grandaunt's husband took his son to the mines with him, to show him how being inside these tunnels and crevices wasn't so bad.
"You're right. Life in these tunnels isn't too bad," the boy said, while coyly smiling, perhaps accepting his fate. Nearly a month went by, and things were normal. The family would be together for dinner, go to church together, living a life of normal and expected. But soon, the moonless nights would return.
It was the first night of the new moon, and they all went to bed early, leaving their candles on until they'd fallen asleep, as if the soft golden glow of a single candle illuminating a cold room could hold back the vast darkness of the moonless night outside. Suddenly, appalling screams that sounded like the shrill cries of a baby or the desperate pleas of a dying man woke them up.
The candles had gone out, and a misty, chill air floated through the house. The screams were getting closer and closer. And then, suddenly, thuds loudly fell on the roof, breaking the shingles with loud cracks. Multiple, petrifying, horrific screams came from the roof. She got out of bed, waking up her husband, both trembling with fear. The cradle with her little baby girl was next to them. The little girl woke up as well, crying loudly as those things outside. She tried to light her candle, but it wouldn't light up. He tried as well, but it was as if that misty chill floating around them kept any fire, any light from igniting. Suddenly, the screams were coming from inside the house, shrill and stupefying sounds only comparable to a nightmare. She picked up her baby, and her husband went in front of her. Grabbing a hammer he kept nearby, naively thinking this could serve as a defense in case those things got too close. They headed towards their son's bedroom, walking in the darkness, tripping over the little furniture they had, making their way towards their boy so they'd all be together. They made it into the boy's room as he lay in bed awake. The family sat together on the bed in pitch-black darkness, recognizing each other only by instinct and each other's body warmth and shape. The birds kept screaming, now walking inside of the house, getting closer and closer towards them. In total darkness, the family realized they were under siege. The room soon was filled with these devil birds coming to take the little baby girl. The father got up and swung his hammer towards the sound of the devil birds, without thinking twice, only hoping wild action could give his family a fighting chance. And then she felt small hands taking away her baby. In just an instant, she couldn't even fight it. It was only a quick pull, and her treasured child was out of her arms. She couldn't see, only feel intense terror, imagining the future of her precious baby. From outside of the house, the parents heard a scream. This time not one of the devil birds, but one equally horrifying. It was their boy, screaming. He was being taken away.
"Mother?"
he screamed, as we all call for our mother when overwhelmed by fear. And suddenly, the house was empty, except for the two parents. The devil birds were simply no longer there. They had vanished like a shadow, as silent and swiftly as an evil thought. They heard distant screams once again, getting farther away every second. They were heading towards the mountains, towards the old tunnels and caves. They couldn't believe what just happened. They just knew they had to get their kids back, no matter the cost. The parents ran as fast as they could towards the mountains where the mines were, and where superstition said the caves of the witches were as well. They arrived at the feet of the mountain, the entrance to the tunnels, and in the darkness they entered, holding each other's hand, hoping their love would protect them. They walked deeper and deeper into the tunnel, only following sounds of distant crying of children. Finally, they arrived in a chamber the hard-working miners didn't know existed in those tunnels. Torches lit up a circle around them, and a tall man wearing a black robe faced away from them. They saw the man had their young boy by the throat, but there were no signs of their baby girl.
"Let him go, you motherfucker, or I swear to God I will fuck you up," said the husband, always a tough man. He took his steps forward towards the man in the black robe, but no matter how much he walked forward, he didn't move at all. My great-grandaunt was paralyzed by fear, still standing on the threshold of the chamber, observing this terrible scene. The man in the black robe turned around to face them, his face obscured by the long hanging robe over his eyes, but they could see he was an old man, with long bony hands and very white skin.
"Let's make a deal," said the man in the black robe. "I'll let your boy go,
in exchange for you, he said. The tough man, hard-working father and husband didn't think twice. He nodded and got closer to the man in the black robe, this time actually being able to move closer.
I'm here. Let go of my son now, said the father.
Come closer, said the man in the black robe. The father obeyed him, now face to face with the man in the black robe. The father tried to raise his hands and strangle the man in the black robe, but something prevented him from doing it. It's not that something held his hands back. Instead, it was as if his arms didn't respond to his commands at all. Then, the father felt a sharp pain on his chest. A ritual dagger was cutting him till its tip reached his backbone. The man in the black robe twisted the dagger, causing the father unbearable pain. At this moment of agony, the father noticed the low angle of the stab wound, and he closed his eyes and opened them again, having a revelation more horrendous than the certain death that awaited him. There was no old man in the black robe. The one who had stabbed him was his son. The boy held on to the dagger, his father's blood dripping down his arm. The mother, still paralyzed by the threshold of the chamber, screamed and screamed until her throat was raw.
Why? Why?
Asked the father, as he felt life slipping away from him.
I want to fly, said the boy, opening his mouth and revealing sharp iron teeth, grinning widely in an unnatural way. So many teeth, so sharp and so big, they couldn't possibly fit in his mouth. The boy looked at his mother standing in the back, and he said,
Mommy, I figured out what I want to do with my life.
His mother looked at him with terror in her eyes. As he smeared his father's blood on himself, finally washing away the baptism, which he had first washed away in the river at night on a moonless night, the boy began to vomit. Not food, but his own insides, his guts coming out of his mouth, the flesh around his neck detaching as torn flesh, his ears growing and turning into large black wings, his head turning into a monstrous bird, and his body falling to the floor, vanishing before touching the ground. The mother turned around and ran into the night, crying and unable to contain her anguished screams. Her son was no longer her boy, and her little baby was ripped from her arms. She found her way out of the tunnel and ran back to town, screaming for help. The next day, the people in town went looking for the missing baby girl, but after days of searching, they never found her. But they did find the skinned corpse of my great-granddad's husband. Many people believed her story, that witches had taken her children and killed her husband, while others thought she was crazy, and she must have killed her husband and drowned her children. She never told them what she had really seen, and what had truly become of her son. Eventually, she left the town and moved to the capital city of Santiago de Chile. After years of solitude, still being an attractive woman, she remade her life and found a measure of happiness with a new husband, a kind and wealthy widower with children from his previous marriage. But still, my grandmother told me that her great-aunt dreamt about what had happened often for the rest of her life. And on moonless nights, when those wicked witches and devil birds could be heard screaming in the distance, she heard them and could clearly hear a word in their screams. Perhaps she imagined it, but among the cacophony of screams, she could clearly hear one of the voices that shouted,
Mother!
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us.